With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
This is RCR, and it's really simple. We're back. We're back in business. We're back on air. After 3 weeks of being off air, I was there at the moment that we went off air. And I know it was a shock to listeners. It was kind of a shock to me. And then the race was on to raise the funds and come up with the idea and the plans that we need to be sustainable, be strong, faster, stronger, better, as we head into what could be even stormier, darker times. Who knows? So I want to welcome on to the program this morning, Alia Bland, one of the founders of RCR. Alia, thanks for coming on this morning.
Thanks, Paul. Isn't it so great to be back? Oh, I'm stoked.
Yeah, so am I. Though getting up that early, got to get used to it again. And we're going to talk about the wider media part of this as well. That's why I've got Marty Gibson from Media Matters on this morning as well. Hi, Marty.
How are you guys?
Pretty good,
right?
Pretty good.
Well
done. Where do we start on this, Alia? It was a, if you don't mind me using the word, ballsy move to just cut the feed, you know, because that set up a situation where it was binary. Either you're going to win or you're going to lose.
Yeah, it was. It was a one-time only option. And if we wind the clock back a little bit to, you know, starting the station altogether, we didn't start with, you know, millionaire backers, you know, filling the purse full of lots of cash. We started with a bit of a cash injection, but it certainly wasn't enough to keep us going long term.
I mean, not 5 million.
Definitely not 5 million. Yeah, no, that was ridiculous what was being spread around that particular rumour. But, you know, it was enough to get us off the ground, but sort of, you know, a good couple of months on, it was month-to-month scrambling to keep the station alive. And, you know, if anyone's sort of responsible for a lot of people and a responsibility like a station like that, it's quite a lot to carry. And, you know, while that might have been able to carry on for a wee while longer, it was extremely stressful and it was limiting us as to what we could actually do going forward and how successful we could be in terms of pressure campaigns and all of the other things that we really need to do to counter what's coming down the pipeline at us. So we made the decision that, yes, we needed to let the community know that we needed their help. But if we were going to do that, there was no real point in doing it just asking quietly and nicely and standing in the corner. That wouldn't be enough to get the support that we needed to be able to carry on, right? So what we needed to do was to have enough sort of in the bank as a bit of a insurance policy so that we could ramp up the other forms of revenue like the memberships and all the other things that we have in our plan that you can see on the website. So that would kind of top up any shortfall that we have there while we're rolling out the plan and growing that membership base. So we decided that was the way to do it, was to go bold and bait the media, in a sense, into covering the story and making it a whole lot bigger than we could ever make it ourselves. And, of course, they came to the party, as predicted. You know, they're pretty good at taking the bait. And yeah, so then it just rolled away from there, and it's been really we've been really busy, we've been really humbled, it's been extremely stressful. The first week or so we'd raised, you know, a significant amount of money, but it still wasn't, you know, we had a target to hit, and we knew that we weren't going to be able to carry on unless we actually reached that target. And we were at that point wondering, you know, whether we were just going to be coming back for 1 or 2 months and having to wind it up, which was a heartbreaking kind of thing to have to consider. And so we went out, and I've worked, you know, the hardest I've ever worked really since the mandates, when we were helping people with the mandates, and that was a particularly crazy time. And we've just worked our tails off to try and scratch together enough funding. And then this last push with the community was really, really amazing with the dollar match and getting that all over the line in less than a week. It's been a ride. We're just so, so grateful for the community who have chipped in, who've believed in us, who've wanted to see us succeed and believe in our vision and our mission. And it's unique in New Zealand's media landscape.
Yeah, it has been one hell of a ride. Just well, the whole way through from day one, I was there for day one, up till now, and it seems to me it's the old adage: if you do something well every day, every hour, every day, and people like it, then over time you build up the love, actually, because that seems to me what it is all about ultimately in the end. And I got to say, I was pretty optimistic in my gut because I see that feedback every day. I see what people say. I know who we've talked to. I added it up, not making it about me, but I added it up. I've done over 1,200 interviews for the
Wow.
breakfast show. Like
Yeah, there's been an
1,200.
incredible volume of really high quality journalism for, I mean, I don't know what the figure that has been spent so far is, but I've got a good enough idea about it to know that if National Radio had have done anything even close, it would have been regarded as one of the great feats of public service. So it was quite interesting to see the churlishness when, there was the idea that it might get shut down, and people wanting to spit on it rather than regarding it for what it was, which is one of the great feats of public service to New Zealand.
Well, I've been calling it the greatest comeback in New Zealand radio history. Now, there might have been some comebacks before. I don't know. When things were pretty stable, the business model was pretty stable. You tended to get, quite long-term operations doing okay over decades. But I've been referring to it as that. I've been around for a while, over 43 years doing this, and I have not seen anything like it. This is history. It is.
Well,
I'm
it's really
telling
butting up against that truth that news is information that some people don't want to see reported. Everything else is just PR. And the problem is that most media has descended into the PR, but it's just press releases and things that the people with the power are perfectly happy for people to be believing.
And it's also the broadcast model, Marty, in talk radio particularly. If you're a regular radio station to pay the bills, you're paying or playing probably 8 to 10 minutes of advertising an hour. They have to be broken down into breaks, otherwise you're going to have a huge block and people are going to turn off, which means any segment can only go 5 or 6 minutes max. Now, if you want to have a long form, in-depth interview, it's impossible. You can't do it because it becomes so fragmented. Even if you hold them over for the break, the people have forgotten what they said before you went to it. So it doesn't work structurally. Some platforms are going to have to try and sort that out. Otherwise, they're not going to make it, is my assessment, long term anyway.
Sorry, Ollie, I don't know. The problem that we've got here is a similar one to what we've got in healthcare, where people are used to the idea that they should get it for free. And people are reluctant to spend money on their health, even though it's the most precious thing they have. And when people are used to getting the news and information free, there's, I think, a similar mental block to paying for it, even though it's directly related to that other really precious thing we don't fully appreciate until it's gone, which is our freedom. And it's not over dramatic to say that. It's worth paying for because if there's not someone in that space reporting on the news, which is something that people with power don't want reported, we're going to ride this all the way down, and we don't want that for our kids.
Yeah, some people were saying, because we've kept a close eye on the socials over this last 3 to 4 weeks, and there was an odd person that said, we should be getting government funding, and it was like, no, we really cannot get government funding. That would be a disaster. Because then you were bought just like all the others, and there's strings attached, right?
I wish Kiwis would stop that sort of mummy's apron strings mentality. right? I mean, leave it behind. It's gone. That world has gone.
Yeah. A breakthrough I had in my thinking was confronting how profound the difference is between people like us who don't mind saying that the emperor wears no clothes and those still saying how wonderful the clothes are or just keeping quiet in case they get cut out of the herd. You know, and I guess what really struck me was that understanding that people are fond of telegraphing how sensible they are by saying, I don't believe in conspiracy theories, aren't actually saying that we're wrong. The fact they're using labels that are coined by intelligence agencies to marginalize people is a clue, right?
Well, I used to hear those lines from people like me reading the news on RNZ. Yeah. That's where that comes from.
Yeah, they haven't studied the issues or the theories or the facts beyond what the corporate media deems to feed them because they're scared. And once you understand that, you get a better understanding of the mission, I guess. It's not as simple as just giving the information. And that's what the more histrionic part of the freedom movement seemed to think. You know, if we can just get the information out there, people wake up and understand it's a lot more complex than that psychologically, what we're being subjected to.
Speaking of the psychology, what do we make of, first of all, I want to talk about the media reporting that you mentioned at the beginning earlier, because that fascinates me, but also the comments that people have been making. And just to kick that off, I've noticed a sort of a pattern, and it might have just been what I look at and maybe not the general thing, but people started off, you know, with derision. Then when it looked like it was getting somewhere, it became a grift. And then when we get through, it's like, well, when are you going to have your hand out again? I mean, get the frickin' message. You know, this is well supported. The sensible people are supporting this. And it seems to me that out there, there are people who just can't make the connection, the simple connection, the shift to the realization that, oh, there's something here. It's always recalibrated in a negative way to the next worst-case scenario.
It's not like they've listened to it, Paul, and gone, you know what, I don't like the angle these guys. They haven't listened to it. Again, that's the breakthrough I had. They're not saying, hey, these guys are this and that because they've engaged with the material and made a critical analysis of it. They're just scared. They're scared that what happens to their worldview if they have to confront that the goblin of news, Paddy Gower, is lying to them. It's like pulling a house out of a house of cards.
That's so true. You know, we've had several influxes of trolls over onto our Facebook page, which is always entertaining. And you know, they all say the same things. You know, they call you a conspiracy theorist, misinformation spreaders, rah rah rah. And then the topics they kind of suggest that you cover are topics that we don't even talk about. So it's, they've got it in their head because someone else has told them, or they've just made it up, you know. And when you challenge them to actually give you an instance of said misinformation on the station, silence. There's only one troll, he might be listening, probably is, who actually does seem to listen occasionally. And so he has a good arguments for things again, you know, and that's fine. That's what we're here for. We're not here to tell people what to think. We're here to encourage people to sort of think for themselves and come up with their own ideas on things. And if you listen and you don't like it, that's fine. And if you listen and you find it valuable, then that's great too. It's something that seems to be a foreign concept to people these days, is the ability to use your own brain.
Well, the little battle I fought on one of the Facebook groups I'm in for radio people was that it's not technically radio. Gosh, that was what they were twisted up about, for crying out loud. I pointed out anything that comes through data network, Wi-Fi, cell phone tower, still on the radio spectrum, it's radio. But that, forget everything else, that was what was twisting them up. And it's so trivial.
You find that's what I've found with a bunch of the arguments on social media, is that people choose to get into the weeds when they can't address the thing that's right in front of their face, and they don't want to have to admit, you know, that maybe what you're doing is actually fine and right and good and proper. They just want to attack it on one tiny little niggle, you know.
Yeah.
And if you think you've really got us on that, then geez, go back to school.
It's not a battle of ideas. It's we're engaged in a battle, basically, that pits courage to face facts against the cowardness of willful ignorance.
Well put.
And once you fully sort of digest that, it all makes a lot more sense, because the temptation is, when people are acting in good faith and with open hearts, is you're taking people at face value. And it's a lot more difficult to confront that someone is that playing out that sort of mental drama.
What do we make of the media coverage that RCR received through this? Who wants to talk about that?
It's been mixed. You know, in the first instance, some of those first articles that came out were actually like promotional pieces, and they did exactly what we wanted them to do. You know, there was the odd kind of word thrown in there, like fringe and that kind of thing. But by and large, they took a bunch of the quotes from the video that we'd put out and they published them. And we were like, oh, great. Excellent. And the Q&A piece was not bad at all. You know, of course, They had the negative framing of the protesters and all that kind of stuff. But that's kind of like a given. I kind of overlook that stuff these days. But that was another promotional piece. We had an interesting interaction with a New Zealand Herald reporter who had, they're all on our mailing list, you see. And when we had put out an announcement that there was going to be an announcement. Sorry, everybody. I know that takes you back to the bad old days.
It does. You're freaking me out.
We kind of had to, you have to, this is the problem. You live in a world where you have to get people's attention all the time. And so we couldn't risk those kinds of emails being overlooked. So we needed to let people to know to watch out for it. Anyway, the Herald fellow messaged us to our inbox asking if he could, please, could we tell him what the announcement was going to be ahead of time so that he could publish it in the article later that afternoon?
And we'll scoop.
No, I think we've got to tell our own people first, actually, buddy.
Yeah,
and there was an interesting one, I think it was last week, was it, the spin-off? That one was, you know, bordering on kind of hysterical. But again, just more attention.
But it didn't go to any of the quality of what we do. It didn't speak to any of that at all.
No.
But there is a little, you know, as you said earlier, there's a little bit of humility creeping in there that's no doubt partly the result of journalists being so shell-shocked at the moment. I mean, I was always interested in comments on stories I wrote as a journalist. I'd read them all. It can't be easy for them to look at the Facebook feeds and just see the almost universal negativity. You know, there was that notice that the New Zealand Herald did, you know, support New Zealand journalism for 50 cents a day. And there was something like 2,000 laugh emojis after it and very few likes. You know, as a journalist, you've got to look at that and you've got to think, you know, if I'm really coming down too hard on RCR, there's a possibility it won't age well.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that that article had said, you know, it was critical of the way that we'd gone about things. It was trying to, I think from memory, I haven't read it recently, but it was saying something along the lines of, was it just a grift? Sort of, was it just a scam, you know, a publicity stunt? They couldn't perceive that there was a situation, a scenario in which, yes, we were up against the wall financially and we were going to be clever about how we dealt with that.
As if you wouldn't be.
Yeah.
They're probably thinking, well, what are they doing with all their government money? why haven't they got, you know, what are they doing with that magic government money tap?
I saw some criticism early on of the video that Alastair Harding made, brilliant video to kick off, you know, the last 3 weeks. And it was very well made. And of course, Pete is fantastic fronting it. And there was criticism of the quality of it.
Yeah.
You know, that it was too slick, or intimating that, you know, that's part of the grift. And I was thinking, and mentioned a few people, imagine if we did it on a cell phone, then what would they be saying? Oh, cheap and nasty. Who would give money for that? You know,
you can't win.
No, you can't.
You can't win. And in case people aren't aware, because that was something that came up, there's a perception that because we have incredible people who are extremely talented on our team, like Alistair and the others that were helping him, who can make quality goods like that video, they did it for nothing. You know, these people do it because they believe in the cause. And that is so much so for a lot of the things that we do that look like they cost a lot of money. And we quite liked to keep that kind of perception out there because it was helpful for us in terms of busting into the media scene for them to feel a little bit afraid about the fact that we had a lot of backing when we really were just kind of calling in favors and presenting a whole lot bigger than we actually were. So the one, you know, the full page ads, the billboards, all of the things that looked like they were flashy and expensive, those things were paid for by people who have a few more pingers in the wallet, and they wanted to see this the operation RCR be successful, and so they wanted to pay for those things, but they weren't paying market rates because we have some really wicked people on our side who get us amazing deals, and you know, for a fraction of the cost of what anyone else would get it for, and yeah, in some cases they're free. So you know, this whole machine that we created to look and you know, put on the suit of appearing much bigger than we are was really just a sort of a mirage, a facade. It wasn't because we had spent everybody's sort of $28 on billboards and things like that. That's not what happens at all.
It's a very talented team. I'm still glaring over Pigeon Park from a billboard in downtown Wellington.
Excellent. You see,
still there.
These are the things, right? Like, we have people on our side that keep these sorts of things up. And, you know, when otherwise they would come down. And so this is what you get when you have a community of people who believe in the cause and who have great trust in what you're doing and who want to see a better future for New Zealand. It's a completely different model. Like, the mainstream traditional media just cannot wrap their heads around it, that anybody could want to do this for the goodness of their hearts rather than to make a whole lot of money, right? Like, yes, it costs a ton to make these sorts of things operational. That's just the reality of where we're living in 2024. But you know, it's not here to rake in the cash and pay everyone for trips to go overseas. That's just not what it's about.
Yeah, and I would just add, before we get on to the challenges we face now, because we're going to hit the ground running and there nothing goes away, a couple of comments about how this reflects on other media platforms now, because for many, the future of RCR for now is decided in their minds. But there are other media platforms out there, mainstream, on the edge of mainstream, however you want to describe them, that from my understanding and perception do not have the audience love, and I'll use that word again, that RCR has built up. And of course, that doesn't negate commercial opportunities and activities that we can leverage off and create going forward and improving the sustainability margin, let's say. But the spotlight turns back now, doesn't it, on those entities. Like, how are you going to survive? How are you going to generate love with your audience to the point where they'll, as part of a business model, contribute or donate or support that? And I don't think there are too many happy answers to that at the moment for the others. That's how I'm seeing it. What do you think?
Yeah, I see it that way too. They don't have a community. Everything is so fickle. People's attention is so short. They don't really have a reason to stick with a traditional station or network. If it's going down the gurgler, they'll just switch to something else. There's no reason for them to stick around. I really don't know how they're going to change that, because they've put down their audiences over the time, I think, by telling them lies or, you know,
just taking them for granted.
They're taking them for granted. And that comes with consequences.
Yeah.
Well, the very stark division I see in the whole thing is that we're the media outlet, if you like, that is confronting the idea that we could be on the brink of some pretty pretty severe change, you know, incredible
edge of a cliff, Marty.
And politics and mainstream media is all about pushing this idea of stability and that everything's going to be pretty much and we're going to get back to normal. And I think, you know, that you know, there could be some commercial opportunities for us in forming those communities and saying, well, okay, how do we confront that reality? But there's going to be a lot that's not going to age well in the mainstream media. I think could get suddenly a lot worse for them once people understand the extent to which they were betrayed, not just by media either. All of our major institutions need to be taken to bits and reassembled.
Doesn't also mean that there is a new level of legitimacy, the perception of legitimacy out there for RCR, which means that if you're a politician, you know that there's a big audience there and you know it's well supported. You can't ignore that anymore, can you?
I don't think you can.
We have to be part of a mix now.
We are pumped to get back. And I tell you, we have got some really amazing things up our sleeves within the first few weeks of coming back. So next week, we have got Professor Ramesh Thakur and Dr. David Bell, who are both former UN and WHO people. Ramesh is, you've had him on a couple of times. Paul, I think he was like the former associate Secretary General, I think, of the UN. You know, these are no slouches.
1,200 interviews earlier. It's hard to remember every single one.
But I
definitely remember David Bell. We've had him on two or three times.
And yes.
He's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, those two are giving a talk in Australia this week, and we've managed to pop their arm up their back to come to New Zealand to do the same thing here. So keep an ear out for that, everyone. We will be putting out some more information about that in the coming days. The event itself will be in Auckland Central, and there will be a press release, a press conference as well, that will happen on all about the WHO and what's coming down the pipeline with their international health regulations and treaties and what have you. So that is a big deal. And there's other exciting things in the mix that will come out in the coming weeks. We will let you know. But that's one of the things we really want to focus on alongside putting in the things in place, the plan to become more self-sustaining, is running that sort of parallel track of focusing on campaigns. So we want to be seriously looking at the digital ID, the CBDCs that have been, you know, there's been developments in that space since we've been offline, and there's more to come, you know, all of the usual things that we are interested in talking about. But we want to get more organized and create pages on the website where you guys can send friends and loved ones who might just be wanting to learn about this stuff, but in a simplified sort of a way. So we're looking at all these sorts of ways to educate the community and making shareables for you guys to be able to send out within your networks so that you can get people's interest and drive them back to learn more about it. So we're really excited about the opportunity that you guys have all our listeners have given us. Like, this is our 2.0.
Yeah, reboot.
Yeah.
I can report firsthand from a function I went to in the weekend, catching up with Tanya Lees of the Calm Group in Kapiti, all right? And she came on, I think, months and months ago, first up, talking about the whole managed retreat thing. And I can't remember all the technical descriptions. That's the one I cling to, yes. In Kapiti. And at first, they were getting no respect. No one was turning up with them to meetings. People, council officials and councillors were, she told me, sitting the other way on their phones as they were talking. That was the level of disrespect. At the last meeting that they had a few weeks ago, 250 locals turned up.
That.
And it blew the councillors away. And she said, thanks to you.
Mm.
Wow. It's all making a difference. Everybody, everything that everyone is doing is making a difference. Turning up to those meetings, sharing it, talking about it, listening to the radio, interacting on social media, all of these things help to give it legs. So
the price is still so low. I mean, we've just recently had Anzac Day, you know, and you can read about men who lost their lives, parents who lost children, the terrible cost of war. So, you know, the sacrifices that are made by hosts and by the people making these things, you know, for free, or
there's nothing compared to that.
People donating something, it's a really good investment in what we might avoid if we can confront some of these things that are in store for us if we remain complacent.
All right. Anything more to say about being dragged through the hedge backwards?
Just thank you for fronting up everyone who helped out and standing with us.
We had some really, you know, the sorts of messages that bring tears to your eye. People who were, you know, they were doing without their weekly coffees. They were cancelling their Netflix or Sky subscriptions. They were, some people downgraded their internet connection so that they could afford the difference to pay. You know, you are talking about people who are really, they value it that much that they are prepared to, you know, take a hit on their comforts of life. And we just, you know, that really does touch our hearts. And we want to say thank you so much to everybody for doing that. There was another lady who I won't say her name, but when we were close to getting to the goal, she put in three lots of $10,000 price match it to get us over the line. And we thought, oh, maybe that was a mistake because they came through really close proximity. And we thought, maybe there was a bank mistake. But it wasn't. I managed to call and check that it was made, you know, on purpose, and it was. And so that was what actually finally got us over the line. So, you know,
what a great way to end, too, eh? Yeah. What a great way to end. Oh, shucks. All right. So we're cranking the handle and we're getting things back up and running. It'll take a few days. I mean, we're back on this morning, but we're not quite at full RPM yet. We will be soon. So all those things you just mentioned before are to come. And how do we think then, because we're going to be here for this year, how do you think this year's going to be? I got a feeling it's...
could be a bit bumpy.
Yeah, turbulent, you know, like clear air, severe turbulence even. And people are losing, I don't want to use the S word, you know, the crime, the violence now is noticeably, there's an uptick. I mean, Ponsonby Road, Bayfair Shopping Centre, Wellington Hospital just down the road. I saw the cop cars heading to that the other night. These things never used to happen. They're happening a lot. So people are under pressure.
Gisborne's getting a couple of shootings a week in Gisborne now, which, and they're not getting reported in the papers.
And they're in public where people can get hit in the crossfire. No one's out. You know, this is.
Yeah, it's only going to take a certain amount of a jolt to give us a bit of social liquefaction.
Well put.
You know, I think that's the danger. If there's some sort of shock that our structure's been sufficiently weakened that, and so again, that's a major thing I see RCR doing is building those communities to strengthen us against those sorts of things.
And I've noticed also that there's H5N1 now transmissible from cows to humans. We have huge dairy herds. Watch out there. There's measles. So I wonder if we're in for more of this vaccine insanity.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's those dramatic pictures of people with red eyeballs, right? And I got a message from a friend of mine who's an eye surgeon, who said viral conjunctivitis is almost never a serious condition, not to the eyes, not to the patient. Spontaneous subjunctival hemorrhage looks impressive, but is almost never a serious condition. But is not to the eyes, not to the patient, but is this disease X the next plandemic? Then it becomes a serious condition.
Well, it has look bad, doesn't it?
You're
it has
warming to look us bad. Up. There's this thing on dogs, you know, someone's probably got an idea, you know, dogs are a major source of... you know,
there goes Rover.
So we better get rid of them, and
so
we're here
and attacking the food supply too. I think, you know, it's all very predictable when you look at it, when you know what you're looking at, you know what I mean?
All right, well, yeah, what a ride. Thanks so much. It's difficult to say thank you enough, is the way I feel.
Yeah, it really
is. Sound genuine with every single one of them. You sort of run I'd have to do so many repetitions, but it just
I think people are getting value, and I think, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it. And I think, you know, it's not just a case of survival, as you say, Alia. There's so much more we can do as the support grows. You know, I mean, I'd love to see us do some material for kids. Of all the people who've been programmed, they're the ones that need some counterfactuals the most.
Well, when you say kids, though, who are you talking about, Marty? What sort of kids?
Well, I guess high school students, but it's amazing the extent to which, you know, they've done a number on the kids in the last generation or two.
Yeah.
Don't I know. All right. Well, thanks for coming on this morning. It feels really good. I'll take it.
All right.
I'll take the feeling. Yeah. I'll take it. I love it. And we'll go harder, actually. Right?
Yeah, we're here. We're going to make you guys proud of your belief in us. So thank you all so much.
Thanks very much.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.